Tom Woods Show, episode 1484.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
All right, for all you men out there listening to this program, I don't normally believe in peer pressure, except in this case. Can you really be a Tom Woods Show listener if you're not using Harry's razors with all the rest of us? We use it because we all get a close, comfortable shave. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your special trial offer by going to harrys.com/woods. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. Very glad to be joined by Eric Brakey today. He served two terms in the state Senate in Maine in the 2nd District and is currently seeking the, I guess, not open seat, but contested with a Democrat, a congressional seat in Maine for the U.S. Congress. And I can tell you he's an all-around great guy, absolute 100% Ron Paulian. And I dare say a Tom Woods Show listener, and just delighted to have this opportunity to talk to him about what's going on in Maine and across the country. Eric, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Glad to be on with you.
I remember you from back in the Ron Paul days. I remember hearing about your election to the state Senate in Maine and being very happy about that. I just got back from a trip to the Portland area, which I think is maybe, I don't know, maybe not quite Eric Brakey country, maybe you might put it that way. But I understand that you are either planning to announce or have announced you're running for a congressional seat in a district in Maine. So let's talk about that. First of all, what is this district? What does it include?
Yeah, so there are two congressional districts in Maine. There's the first district, you know, around Portland. That's where all the socialists live. And then there's the second district, which is very rural. That's where, that's where the bears and the moose live. And it's a district that Trump actually carried by 10 points. There's a strong Republican advantage in the second district, though it's currently held by a Democrat who won by the skin of his teeth in the blue wave last year. But the state Senate district that I represented for two terms, 4 years, is in the second district. And I'm getting ready to launch actually on Constitution Day coming up, September 17th. I'm going to be formally launching my campaign for Congress, seeking the Republican nomination for the 2nd Congressional District.
All right. So I want to spend a little time talking about that state Senate career you had there, just because that's of interest. You were, you know, sort of one of us, and I'm curious to know about some of the details there. I know that you did, in that time, make something of a name for yourself. But let's talk about this race right now. Are there other declared candidates yet among Republicans? And by the way, is the seat empty or occupied or what?
Yeah, it had been for 4 years the only Republican congressional district in all of New England. But just last year, you know, we got hit really hard by a big blue wave. And even the Republican half of the state, the 2nd congressional district, a Democrat won that seat. So it's currently occupied by a very vulnerable first-term Democrat who just won it by the skin of his teeth last year. And we're going to win it back. We're not just going to win it back for the Republican Party. We're going to win it back for the Liberty Movement and make sure that Thomas Massie isn't so lonely down there in Washington.
Wow. Okay. So what is the, I don't know, what do you think of the prospects of victory for you? And now, of course, you're asking a politician that, well, of course, I'm certainly going to win. But I mean, realistically, handicapping the race, who are the other Republicans likely to enter?
Yeah. So as of right now, there's no one else. Now, the big question was, what was the former Republican Congressman Bruce Poliquin going to do? This is the Republican who held the seat for 4 years and lost last year. There was a lot of speculation he might run for it again. But he announced just a few weeks ago that he is not running, which has kind of made it open season. But, you know, we've been out there. I've been out there fundraising. We've had some impressive fundraising numbers already. We released 31 endorsements from state Republican legislators. We've been bringing kind of all factions of the Republican Party together. And I think certainly, I can't guarantee that no one else will get into the race, but I think certainly I'm going to be the front runner for this race, especially because last year I was the Republican nominee for United States Senate. I'm very well known in the party from my years in the state Senate and running for U.S. Senate. The U.S. Senate race made me much more of a known name across the state of Maine, and we're in a very good position to win the Republican nomination. And if with Trump on the ballot in 2020 and him having carried this district by 10 points, it's going to be a good year to be a Republican in that district.
When is the nominee officially decided?
It'll be in June of next year. So we've got a long road ahead of us between now and then. So we'll be again launching on Constitution Day, and then starting to tour around the second district, meeting people, raising the funds, and talking with people about why liberty is the answer to our problems, not more Washington D.C. big government telling us how to live.
That second district must be gigantic. Maine is a huge state as it is, and it's the district you have, of course, is not very dense population-wise. You must have to drive around like a lunatic.
It is the biggest congressional district east of the Mississippi. So, if the population centers are all in the south, around Portland in the first district. But if you look at a map of the two districts in Maine, the second district encompasses probably about like 90% of all the geography of the state. So it is a massive district that you're going to have to put a lot of miles on the car.
Yeah, no doubt. I've heard about people campaigning in Idaho, and they had exactly the same kind of experience. That's what made me think of it. So what kind of things are you going to emphasize? I mean, these days, those old slogans from the 1980s that worked for Ronald Reagan about we need less government just don't seem to ring true to a lot of people anymore. You don't hear it being talked about that much. You don't hear people identifying the government as really being the source of their problems as much anymore. They feel like there's a precarious economy, and they're not quite sure who's responsible for that. They think corporations are the enemy. They think that the state might be able to step in and level the playing field for them, or prop up the middle class, or strengthen the social safety net. I don't nearly as often hear the anti-federal government rhetoric. Do you have the same experience? And if so, how are you going to reverse that?
I think that's true to an extent. Certainly, we don't hear it to the extent that we heard when the Tea Party movement was big, when Ron Paul was running for president, and you know, people were starting to sing kind of our tune about government. But I do think that there is something going on in our federal government right now that I think that people are more cognizant of than we have been at any point in the past, which is the fact that elected government itself is becoming a bit of window dressing for the decisions that are actually made in Washington, D.C. More and more, we see that the big decisions, where and when we go to war, how our industries are regulated, how our phones are tapped and our privacy is eroded. These decisions are not being made by our elected officials. These decisions are being made by the unelected government, by these unelected agencies. You know, in Maine, it's become a very big issue. Our lobster industry, which is a $1 billion industry for Maine, is under attack by unelected federal agencies who want to put regulations in place that would cause us to cut the number of lobster lines in our oceans in half. Our representatives never voted on this. No one we voted for ever voted on this. This is something being imposed on us by unelected agencies. I think that restoring the promise of elected government, government of and by the people, is something that resonates with a lot of people. We're experiencing regulation without representation. We're experiencing our sons and daughters being sent off to war, and our elected members of Congress not even having any vote on the matter. And that's something we're going to certainly emphasize.
So if you were to try to narrow it down and have, I mean, look, for example, Donald Trump, like him or not, you knew that there were certain things he wanted to do. You knew that he wanted to renegotiate trade deals. You knew he wanted to build the wall. You know, there were certain things you just associated with him because he hammered away at them. So what would be the message you would want somebody in Maine to take away if they weren't reading about you every day and they didn't go to any of your campaign events, but they just associated two sentences with Eric, what would they be?
Rein in Washington, D.C. and empower Maine people.
So what would you say? Like, you know, I talked to a fellow out there when I was in Portland, and he was out in Gorham. He has a farm out there, and he's a listener of mine. And I got talking to him, and I said, when you talk to other farmers, is there a consensus among them as to what the problems are? What the source of the problems that they face is? And he said there really isn't. They have an unease that farmers always have an unease, right, because of the nature of the precariousness of what they do. But he says it's not like they're all saying we need the government to get off our backs. So what would your message be to that rural community, like that specifically farmers would be better off?
Yeah. So I know, especially a lot of folks in Maine have been very frustrated with all of these farm dictates being imposed on us from Washington, D.C. So, for example, I know people who raise chickens. And because of federal mandates, they can't sell their chickens unless they take them to a specific government approved chicken slaughterhouse, which, you know, in parts of rural Maine, you've got to drive hours and hours to get there. It's just not available. It's not practical. These kinds of regulations are put in place, and they essentially they empower the big corporate food producers, and the little guys get really shut out of the process. You know, we've passed food sovereignty laws on the state level here, which is something I support in the state Senate. So when we're talking about whether we're talking about food or whether we're talking about any other issue, the message is Washington, D.C. doesn't know us. It doesn't know Maine. It doesn't know how we do things here. Why would we have a city 500 miles away from our southern border telling us how to live and how to do things? We've been doing it pretty well. In Maine, we have pioneered sustainable farming practices, sustainable fishing practices for generations and generations. And the idea that these unelected government bureaucrats sitting in an office somewhere could do it better than us is ridiculous. We need to be able to make our own choices again.
I want to spend a little time now talking about your state Senate years. And what years were they?
I was elected in 2014 and was reelected in 2016.
Okay. So that's after the two Ron Paul presidential campaigns. But you were, I mean, I first came to know about you as a result of the whole Ron Paul thing, and because you identified yourself as a supporter of his. So obviously you're a bit of a minority in that you're a particular kind of Republican in a blue state. So what was it like, not so much dealing with the Democrats, what was it like? And I realize you don't want to antagonize Republicans right now when you're trying to run for Congress, but what was it like working with Republicans in the state Senate?
Well, you know, I had a lot more influence than you would think in the state Senate especially as a first term freshman legislator. I was elected at the age of 26. I was the youngest state senator in Maine and the country at the time. And of course, this was 2 years after I'd been the state director for the Ron Paul presidential campaign. We had taken over the state party. We had taken over the convention, and the establishment to say that they didn't care for me much is a severe understatement. A lot of them hated my guts to a level you couldn't, maybe you could imagine.
Yeah, I think as a matter of fact.
I think a lot of us in the Liberty Movement experienced that back in 2012. But it was really because I was elected, you know, and I ran in a Democrat-leaning district. I ran against a guy who'd been in elected office for longer than I'd been alive. And I beat him by an 18-point landslide by going door-to-door, talking to people one-on-one, and with the help of the Liberty Movement, you know, raising funds and breaking state fundraising records. It was kind of one of the biggest surprise upsets of that election cycle in 2014. And so when I got there, I had a lot of outsized influence as a freshman legislator because it wasn't just me there. It was me representing many, many people across the state, not just in my district, but in the whole Liberty Movement. People who were ready to call and put pressure on their legislators. So when I sponsored, for example, one of the first things I did was I sponsored and we passed constitutional carry for the state of Maine so that people can carry a handgun in the state of Maine and put a jacket on at the same time and don't need a government permission slip to do it. When I put that in, we passed it despite Democrats controlling the House of Representatives because thousands of people across the state were willing to call, email, and harass their legislators to do the right thing and let them know that if they voted against our constitutional rights, they were going to be thrown out of office. That ultimately, by getting people involved in the process, that's how I was able to make a big difference there, whether it was constitutional carry, reforming welfare, or an idea that I took actually after listening to an episode of your show, Right to Try, which we passed here in Maine. And I think it was the gentleman from the 10th Amendment Center who gave me that idea. It was because we got regular people, particularly people in the Liberty Movement, involved in pushing policy in our state capitol.
All right, more with Eric Brakey in just a minute after this extremely important message that both of us endorse, by the way. All right, folks, there is a reason that Harry's is the official razor of the Tom Woods Show. People have been shaving for probably 5,000 years, and the ancient Greeks didn't need gimmicky features like flex balls or heated handles, and neither do you. You just need sharp, durable blades, and that's what Harry's gives you. And I'll tell you, I used to use a blade, and I gave up because I just thought I wasn't any good with them. I would be a bloody mess. I never got a really good shave. Whereas with Harry's, even when I'm shaving with the grain, I'm getting an amazingly close shave. I can't understand how this is happening. Harry's represents a return to the essential. Quality, durable blades at a fair price, just $2 per blade. And there's no risk to you for trying them out. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. But you'd have to be a deranged lunatic to want a refund because these are great. Well, listeners of my show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/woods. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy on the go. Go to harrys.com/woods to start shaving better today. All right, talking about your state Senate career, what happened in 2018? Were you voted out?
No, I actually, after being very popularly reelected in 2016, I decided our U.S. Senator, Angus King, was coming up for reelection. And frankly, he's been kind of one of the worst of the worst. He's kind of one of those so-called moderate politicians who is for big government when it comes to, you know, wars abroad and big government at home when it comes to welfare programs and spying programs and all of that at home. For some reason, in the mainstream media, that is called moderate, being for big government for everything. So he was coming up for re-election, and I thought that he, you know, what could be a better foil for someone who's for big government on everything than someone who's for small limited government on everything? And in Maine in particular, you know, we are a state that historically has, in 2016, we voted to reject gun control and to legalize marijuana at the same time. There is a very strong, just leave me alone attitude in Maine. And so I built my campaign on speaking to that, but of course, was a very big underdog in the race. The media kind of barely covered the race, but still in a big blue wave, ended up performing better against Angus King than anyone else has ever run against him in his many years of statewide elected office. So I had to give up my state Senate seat in order to run for that, but I've been very involved through the U.S. Senate race and through grassroots activism ever since.
By the way, I knew that you ran for Senate. That was just for the sake of it, asking you that. Like, I knew what happened. I knew you hadn't been voted out because I followed your campaign a bit. So what did you anything you learned from that? Like, any mistakes you made? It's not even that you, I mean, you're doing a very, very difficult thing running against an incumbent senator, but all the same, are there things you would have done differently?
You know, there's always a lot of, you know, overall, I think that we did our campaign, our whole campaign, everyone involved in the campaign did an amazing job. We exceeded pretty much every expectation that was there in front of us. I mean, the expectations were set pretty low when you're running against a guy who's a former two-term governor and an incumbent U.S. senator. And I was a two-term state senator that a lot of people hadn't quite known yet. But there certainly are things you learn. One of the biggest things you learn is, how... It was so much easier running for state Senate because I could knock on every door in the district. But running for U.S. Senate, running statewide, you can't quite do that. So it takes a lot more fundraising, a lot more getting your message out on TV, on radio, through direct mail. And we certainly were kind of outmatched in terms of fundraising. But that's something, as we're launching this campaign for Congress, we are going to make sure we have the resources. That's why we're working very hard right now. We're raising the funds. I'm actually out on a fundraising tour right now. Brought my away travel bag.
That's awesome.
So that I can be the king of the airport.
And yes.
Fundraising
That's awesome.
but we're, as I said, we're getting ready to launch on September 17th. This is going to be, I believe, the biggest opportunity for the Liberty Movement since Thomas Massie got elected to Congress in 2012. And it's been a number of years since we've won a seat in Congress, and this is the best opportunity we've had since then. In fact, Thomas Massie has been helping me out quite a bit, and I really appreciate his support and encouragement as I launch into this.
Obviously, you know, well, first of all, I want to ask you a nerd question. Then I want to ask you the juicy question of the hour here. The nerd question comes from my interest in marketing. I think some people, because we live in the age of the internet, disparage direct mail because they think, it's old. Nobody opens the mail anymore. You got to get them online. And I think that you're leaving a lot of terrain open to your opposition if you're not using direct mail. Has that been your experience?
I really like direct mail. And now most campaigns, their direct mail is like, hey, here's a bunch of glossy slicks that show up in the mailbox that look nice. People take one look at it and it ends up in the trash can. You know, there's a place for that. That's what most campaigns do. But frankly, I think that there's, you know, I think the most effective direct mail is when a voter gets a letter from me, something that kind of goes a little bit more in depth, something that people can read over, a letter from me on an issue they care about or about the general campaign. Or sometimes in the past, we've just sent out, you know, a letter from my mom to voters, sharing family stories and connecting with people on a more personal level. At the end of the day, all politics, as much as we would like to believe that people make decisions based on the issues, based on the principles that we care about, that might be true for maybe 20, 25% of voters. But most voters are just voting for someone who they like, who they trust. And so it is that personal connection that makes a very big difference. To any Liberty candidate who is looking to run for anything, whether it's from dog catcher to U.S. Senate or anywhere in between, you always want to ask yourself, how am I making the personal connection with the voter? You want them to know that you're there, you're going to listen to them, you care about what they care about, and that they can trust you.
All right, now this one's just a softball right over the plate here, but I've got to ask it. Obviously, you know, my audience is basically all libertarians, and I want to know how you make the case to them that supporting you is important, given that they have heard people who talk a good game and who turn out to be not so good. Now, in your case, if you know my line about the king of the airport, you know, that should be enough to reassure them whose camp you're in. And I certainly want you to win, but how do you talk to skeptical libertarians who kind of feel like been there, done that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I have a proven record, and anyone can look at my record in the state Senate. I have received all the temptations from all the government officials, all the people saying, hey, Eric, just compromise your principles on this and we'll help you with this or that. And I have stood up to that and I have stood my ground every single time. In the state Senate, not only have I proven record of passing liberty legislation from medical cannabis to gun rights to right to try, but I've also have a record of being the most consistent person to stand up and be the lonely no vote against all of the bills that would come forward and steal more of our money or trample our freedoms. So in that regard, I'm proven. But what is the value of a seat in Congress to us in the Liberty Movement? Well, let's look at what the value of a seat in Congress right now is to the socialist movement. Let's look at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and what she's doing for their movement with the millennial generation. You know, I'm a millennial. I know that that can be a dirty word in some corners, but we've seen that there are essentially two ideological philosophies that resonate within the millennial generation. Socialism, Bernie Sanders' style of socialism with AOC and others, but also we saw with the Ron Paul campaign that the philosophy of liberty is something that resonates with many in our generation. Right now, the only millennial leaders we really see kind of in the forefront in Congress are people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And the millennial generation will one day be running this country. Are we going to abandon this whole generation to just go down the road to socialism? Or are we going to seize these platforms for ourselves? You know, that's what a seat in Congress represents. Not just an opportunity to vote yes and no on things, not just an opportunity to put in bills and try to change policies. Those things are all important. But as Ron Paul showed, it is a platform to advocate for the ideas and to reach people we would not otherwise be able to reach. And I want to be the AOC of liberty for our movement. I want to use this platform to reach new people and spread our ideas. And if you think that that's valuable, if you believe that if you would see us win this seat for Congress and go and I'll join Thomas Massey and other the small handful of liberty people we have down there, then you can go to ericbrakey.com and chip in $5, $10, $25, $50. Our fundraising quarter ends September 30th, and everything we raise helps.
All right, two more quick things, Eric, then I'll let you go. First one is actually a Maine issue, because as I said, I spent some time up in Maine recently, and I found out that in Maine, they have, I guess, because you can look at a map of the U.S., that shows you what is the state of cannabis laws in the various states. And so some places it's just completely forbidden, and some places their medical is allowed, and some places both medical and recreational. Well, apparently recreational is supposed to be allowed in Maine, and yet there are basically no dispensaries in Maine for that purpose. I'm just curious about what's going on there.
Yeah, it was passed by referendum in 2016, but the state government has really dragged its feet on adult use cannabis. We are just now getting to the point where rules have been promulgated, and I don't know exactly when we're going to start to see adult use dispensaries come into effect, but it should be coming, I would imagine, within the next year or so. I will say, though, our medical market is very expansive. In fact, when I was my last year in the Senate, I led the effort to do a complete regulatory overhaul of our medical market. And so now you can get access to medical cannabis for any condition that a doctor thinks that it would be valuable. You can go to, there are storefronts popping up all over the state. So in many ways, our medical cannabis market has become so expansive. Access is greater than it ever has been before. So at least for now, while we wait for adult use, that will have to suffice for most people.
Okay. And finally, what's your background?
I work for our small family business, Brakey Energy, helped do, you know, manage the financial records. And so that's my small, you know, family small business background. But I've been, you know, in 2010, when I was in my last year of college, I read Ron Paul's The Revolution, a manifesto, and everything has kind of been downhill from there. I just became a liberty activist. I was living in New York City. That led to a job opportunity with the Ron Paul campaign. I moved back to Maine, where my family's been for 10 generations. And, you know, that's just where things have been going, following the liberty movement wherever it takes me, trying to make a difference however I can.
Well, look, I want you to win. I hope you win, and I was not even close. So the website, ericbrakey.com, that's ericbrakey.com, just the way you would think it would be spelled. ericbrakey.com is where you can go support Eric. And you know, folks, listen to me enough, I don't have very many politicians on the show. Well, I've had a couple of sitting congressmen. I've had John Duncan on, had Ron Paul on. Here and there I've had politicians on. But office seekers, not all that much. And mainly because, you know, an office seeker is implicitly or explicitly appealing to my listeners to support them financially. And I can't put my listeners in that position if I don't know for sure that it's a good guy. Because I don't want people throwing their money down a rat hole. I want to be able to know for sure there's a good guy. Well, I'm telling you, I know for sure Eric's a good guy. I mean, smart, dedicated, principled, can't be swayed. So, you know, if you're interested in politics as I am, you know, I like him. So make your decision. But ericbrakey.com is the website. Eric, best of luck to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, folks, tomorrow on the show, Dave Smith comes back. And by popular demand, we're going to talk about that Dave Chappelle special that everybody's talking about. I saw a thread in my private group, the Tom Woods Show Elite, saying that I should do this. And I would say about, I don't know, when people say I should do something, maybe 37.3% of the time I actually do it. And this is one of these times when I'm actually going to do it. So there's no way that's not going to be a fun episode. So you got to tune into that. You got to be in that group, by the way. I mean, if you listen to this show regularly and you're not part of the elite, maybe you don't understand the definition of the word elite. Like, that's for you. Like, you're the exact type of person I made this thing for. So supportinglisteners.com is where you go to be a member of that. And make sure you subscribe to the show. And then you get these episodes delivered to your device automatically every day. You can do that at tomwoods.com/apple. And I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free. And we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.